The following year, 1828, the same problem spread. It couldn't be isolated or contained, because even as far away as Ohio, let's say, way over the mountains, what happened in Philadelphia would have repercussions, and often it took this form. Members of each of the Philadelphia yearly meetings would see to it that they were visitors in the Ohio yearly meeting. And the question would immediately arise whether, since the business sessions were only available for members of the Society of Friends, whether the members of this Philadelphia meeting really were any longer members of the Society of Friends, or whether that were. And if a member from one of the yearly meetings pushed himself forward, then a person in sympathy with the other side would suggest that he ought not to be present. So that in 1828, in New York and Baltimore and in Ohio, the same thing took place, not the same pattern exactly. It could be a different pattern. There was physical violence at one point in Ohio, you know what I mean, and also in New York. And it wasn't always true that one side peacefully withdrew, though sometimes they did, more or less peacefully. That was the easiest way out. But of course, if you deliberately withdrew, it rather put you in a wrong, an unfortunate strategic position. The people that sat tight in the meeting and didn't withdraw, and the clerk who was there for last year and had the minute book in his possession could only be ousted by force. And the book and the bench and so on in the area was subject to that sort of force. Now these are disreputable occurrences, very contrary to Quaker precedent, as you see. I put on the board the way it turned out in the other early meetings. My friend Bacon Evans says that Philadelphia is H2O. I think you see what he means. He means this is the proportion. This is, let's say, 8,000 to 4,000 or 12,000 to 6,000. That's what I mean by those figures. New York, much the same. Baltimore, even more Hicksite, 3 to 1. Ohio, 50-50, 1 to 1. And Indiana, almost negligible number of Hicksites. So that 5 yearly meetings had a separation. 3 yearly meetings did not. New England, Virginia, and North Carolina. That's all the yearly meetings there were in 1827 and 8. So that's the way it came out. The legal case in the Philadelphia yearly meeting was decided in favor of the Orthodox, but after the courts had settled it, the legislature reversed the decision and said the property must be divided pro rata. But it's something to have the decision of the courts on your side.
I thought you said the Orthodox in Philadelphia got fourth and arch and...
Well, this was about the... that wasn't legal. Only this case was way up at... Crossbeach, New Jersey, where the case was tried. Not every bit of property, but in each of these yearly meetings, one piece of property came up. In New York, it was settled in favor of the Hicksites by the court. In Ohio, again, it was settled in favor of the Orthodox. Two new Hicksite yearly meetings were founded afterwards, so that's, and of course, other Orthodox yearly meetings. Well, now may I, for 10 minutes, try to say something about the total history of the Hicksites. One reason I can do it shortly is that they didn't quarrel as much as the Orthodox did. And that makes Orthodox history much more complicated. The Hicksites, once having split off, or being set off, maintained amicable relations among themselves. For one thing, they were not so given to theological quibbling. They'd had enough of it. And having learned the lesson, they didn't want to begin doing within their own society what had happened before. So that these five or seven yearly meetings, as they became a group of yearly meetings, friendly with each other and friendly within each of themselves, but with no rigid standard of doctrine. And the last thing they wanted was that. They therefore tended to be a somewhat unheterogeneous group, live and let live, but still very loyal to a great deal of Quakerism, in fact perhaps more loyal than some of the ultra-evangelicals who put stress on a new place. They were active in anti-slavery work. They believed in the early Quaker doctrine of individual guidance from the light within. They let people form their own opinions, and they were a very tolerant and liberal group of people. The separation, however, gave them a black eye in the sight of the larger churches, because the idea got around, already expressed in this group, that the Orthodox group were evangelical and these were unevangelical or anti-evangelical. They were thought to be to deny the divinity of Christ and the authenticity of the scriptures, and to be on the whole on a par with the Unitarians and the Universalists and other rather small and disliked sects. Remember that all the churches were getting more evangelical this time, the Protestant churches, and therefore the reputation of being unevangelical was tough on the Hicksites. They were they're not only excluded from Orthodox friends, but excluded from the other churches. They couldn't have community of feeling. And that's the general view in which the traditional Orthodox people and the other churches look on the Hicksites, somewhat askance. They lacked some of the drives that the Orthodox friends had. They didn't push foreign missions. They didn't push Bible study. For a while, they didn't push education, higher education. The result is that they didn't build a college until Swarthmore was opened in 1864 or 6. I'm not quite sure officially. I do know they're coming to their 100th anniversary very soon. They established a common newspaper, which was called ultimately the Friends Intelligencer. It was a weekly paper, so that they had this contact. And in 1902, the seven yearly meetings formed what was called the Friends General Conference. Not an overbody, because each yearly meeting is autonomous, but nevertheless a consultative body, a friendly body, and they since 1902, they've met every other year, and had brought people from all over the continent, Hicksite friends, and had put on a very good show. It's been held lately at Cape May, as I think one of the most impressive items in contemporary Quaker life. This large representative group of friends with good outside speakers. They attend that. And particularly for people that come from a small meeting to attend a 2 to 3,000 conference of 200 or 300 friends, makes them feel a little bit less lonely. You can see that. If you go to a little Hicksite meeting out in Indiana, and there are only 20 people ever come to meeting, and there are only 3 other meetings in the whole state, something like that, then you come to this big conference and you'll see it's really a growing concern. So that the whole history of Hicksite Quakerism has run its own course, and has been in many ways a very satisfying manner of life. They were free, they had their friends, and so on.
You have the Hicksite meet in Cape May, you say?
Every other year in June. Even after a bad storm like last year.
Oh, it's no longer divided into Hicksite and Orthodox, is it?
No, I mean Orthodox are invited.
Yeah.
And what I haven't told you is, and I better say, that in 1855, the two yearly meetings in Philadelphia, Orthodox and Hicksite, reunited completely, organic, made one yearly meeting. And the next year, 1856, they did the same thing in New York. They haven't quite all of them reunited, but the most important division have now been cured after 127 years. This, of course, also required preparation. I mean, this didn't happen without steps leading up to it, just the division didn't happen. Over the years, the animosity cooled down. The two groups saw more of each other. I can remember meeting my first Hicksite friend in a conversation. I went to a house party where somebody had the nerve to invite about half of us and half of them. I went to a big conference in Indiana in 1913, and I was the first Orthodox, Philadelphia Orthodox friend ever to get to that conference. And there were some Philadelphia Hicksite friends, Young Friends Movement of the 5 years meeting, but that anticipates a further problem. However, this is what has happened. And the time was ready in 1955 for the two groups to decide that they bury the hatchet and meet together in the various towns that you spoke of. When one meeting's given up, the other one's kept. Both sides meet as one meeting in one house.
What year is this, 1855 or 1955?
1955, 1827 to 1955, and then a year later, 1828 to 1956. Well, one other institution you know, George School. George School was founded much before Swarthmore, but was a boarding school after the manner of Westtown, a country boarding school. So the Hicksite friends have had a homogeneous history in a way, and had a comfortable body of people, and lived their own life, and made their friends, and intermarried among themselves. Although before 1955, some Orthodox and some Hicksite friends married each other.
Keep them up.
Now, next time I'll try to say something about the more elaborate history. I can dispose of the Hicksites in 10 minutes. You remember that saying, happy the nation whose annals are brief? You can apply that to them. Their annals are very brief.
This is the makeup.
Thank you.
Well, Al, did you keep the exam?